In the context of this evening, we're just going to continue on in this psalm. Take it up in verse 8 and down to verse 17, if you want to follow with us. What I may start doing beginning with next week is kind of change up on these sermons. Go back to a little bit of the format, although I'll do still doing some memory stuff, but perhaps just on Sunday nights doing the topical stuff with the slides. Some people like that, just for change of pace. Now, as this psalm continues, verse 8 is kind of interesting. It goes, "Pay heed, you senseless among the people. And when will you understand, you stupid ones?" God has just gone politically incorrect. there's some words in here that usually the teachers and the parents, you know, tell their kids, don't ever use that word. When you stop to think about it, you don't want to use the word because most people don't qualify for these words. If you want to know who qualifies, you know, go back and reread verses 1 through 7. it's what I'll say. If it walks like a duck and it talks like a duck and acts like a duck, you know, it's stupid. It's a cutting chastisement of the way Israel was going and how bad it had become. Those that were running it. In fact, it's not just Israel. You can see this, you know, bubbling up in many nations now through history. And this psalm is going to, you know, show you, even if you're caught up in this period of time or this type of period of time, not to worry about it, because God's got some insights for you. Okay? So as he's talking to these people that apparently are, in fact, in some translations, instead of senseless, it goes brutes. But we're talking about people that have, you know, more muscle than brains, yeah, because they figure, you know, the might makes right and all this sort of thing. And what God is saying, you really haven't stopped to think this thing out. You now noticed in the previous context, we're doing what we're doing, and, you know, God doesn't notice, you know, the God of Israel, whatever. And so the psalmist is going, okay, he who planted the ear, does he not hear? He who formed the eye, does he not see? Now, we're used to, now there's an insight here. What we're used to is when in Genesis 1, God said, "Let us make man in our image." We have a tendency to think, well, what we're talking about is the spiritual, because God is spirit and whatever. But we forget that the qualities of God, besides being loving and all this kind of stuff, is his omnipotence, that he sees everything, whatever. And so it appears when God formed man, the things that he gave us are some of the qualities of the apparatus that begins to mimic things of God. Okay? God sees everything. Okay? And he's given us an eye to see, to understand, you know, what he's seeing here. But our seeing is very limited. Our hearing is very limited. But God hears everything. You know, even so penetrating even the thoughts, you know, of man's heart. And so the psalmist going, you know, start to think about that and a little bit more. If he chastises the nations, will he not rebuke? Okay, when he is dealing with nations. And in fact, this is an insight, too, we don't nearly think about. We think everything goes on the way it is, and God's not interfering with man's, you know, societies and stuff like that. But what the psalmist is telling us is God's very much interfering with it. And there are certain places in the Old Testament where he talks about he raises up the rulers, and he brings them down. Okay? A lot of what we're seeing in the prophets is God's prophecy among what he's going to do to Nineveh, to Edom, to Egypt, to Assyria, whatever. You know, it's just all the nations around God's having to deal with. But not just chastising, everything about it. You know, we learned in Amos 9 Yeah, where the Jews were like, well, we're special people. God brought us out of Egyptian bondage, you know, and gave us that land. But Amos goes, well, he also brought the Philistines out of Captor and the Arameans out of Kir. You know, he had a hand in other nations, you know, taking them out of, you know, places, you know, that were convenient for them and bringing them into new lands. So God's got his hand in these things. Okay. Now, the next phrase. Now, my version goes, that's wrong. Okay, I got that far. He who chastens the nations also brings about your rebuke. But then he goes, doesn't that last part of that verse? Some of that, doesn't he teach man knowledge? Okay, now, hang on to your brains here. Okay. This is what the scholars call aposiopesis. It's a sentence that stops right in the middle. Okay, now the translators don't have the luxury of explaining to you what's going on here. So what my translator does go, even he who teaches knowledge to, you know, teaches man knowledge. But take off the even and you got the gist of what's happening here. He teaches man knowledge. There should be some more about that. Okay, he cuts it off to relieve the rest of it to your imagination. Okay, how much, you know, I mean, if you start to think about all the knowledge, you know, whatever man knows, he got from God, unless it's something he made up. But God gave him also that imagination. He gave him the ability to reason and figure things out. Everything that's going on in here, that's a gift from God. It's a tool. You've got to use it right or, you know, or wrong. And so there's things to think about here, and he wants to leave it to your imagination. You know, he gave you a brain. Okay, start using it. I mean, he's really coming down on these people because they are senseless. They're acting stupid. You know, they think they can do whatever they want to, and God doesn't care. He's not involved in it. What's that next line? Okay. God knows the thoughts of man. They are a breath. Okay, you're used to James going, you know, life is just a vapor or whatever. But he's going, okay, you think your life's a vapor? Yeah, think about your thinking, especially compared to God. Okay, God's concerned in the nations and everything. Do you really think he's overlooking all this stuff? I mean, this is what makes a stupid person. You know, when he becomes so arrogant, you know, he thinks he's smarter than the God that taught him how to think. Or he knows more than the God that gave him knowledge. I mean, this is something we need to think about ourselves. Now, the position of God, you know, sometimes we have a tendency to make God really small and not realizing that, you know, as we look out into space, we may be just looking into his eye. You know, that's the little colored things inside of here. And there's a lot there we can't see at all. It goes on into infinity, beyond infinity. However big the universe is, God is bigger than it. I mean, it boggles the mind to stop to think just how powerful he is, just how smart he is. And men think, okay, he made all this. In fact, the next verse is a beatitude. Blessed is he whom is chastised by the Lord, and whom God teaches from his law. Now, this is just a normal course for a loving father. I was going to have you, you know, somebody read Hebrews 12, but Justin did that Wednesday. Yeah. So we'll just use Justin's lesson from Wednesday. What does it say? He chastises though he loves every child, you know, that's his. And this is what this blessing is saying. Okay, blessed is the person that God chastises. Okay, are these people, these stupid people, being chastised? God's loved ones are being chastised. Okay, as you do a child, okay, you may spank a child, you know, to correct them, but you also sit down with them and explain to them why you're, you know, correcting them, why you're punishing them. It's a teaching moment. So these two things go logically together. The chastening of the Lord and the instruction of the Lord out of His Word. And this is what we learn as His children. As, you know, there's things that seem to be object lessons for us. We have to go through this from rough times. God is trying to teach us things. And we get an insight like the psalm has given us. As we hit into hard times, you know, the psalm is teaching us, hey, God is trying to show you something here. Now, hang in there. So as it follows from the Beatitude, so that God will be your relief in days of distress. So if the nation gets dark or whatever, and times get bleak and hard and whatever, God is going to be there for you in a big way. Notice the next line. Just hang in there. He's digging a pit for the wicked. And a lot of that is because He's not chastising them. What happens to somebody when nothing happens to them? Yeah, they never learn the consequences of their actions. You can start with the bully on the playground. You know, he's going to pick on people. Okay, until he thinks he can get away with it with anyone, until he marches into a bigger playground. He runs into somebody who's a bigger bully than he is. Or even, notice, since Satan no longer has free reign, there's never been a world empire. Okay. This psalm develops that. There's a reason for that. Because, well, even you know what we're studying in Nahum, what happened with the Assyrians? You know, they get cocky, they think they can rule it over, and they start pushing the boundaries, you know, of their... It gets down to they spread themselves too thin. Every nation begins to do that. Okay, Nazi Germany began to do that. Yeah, yeah. Because as you start to spread out in the world, a little central people cannot rule the vast majority. There's just no way they can do that. You know, even if they have all the computers in the world and all the cameras to spy and a whole army looking at the internet as to what people are publishing and they're looking at everything they're doing, they just simply cannot control it all. And eventually it's going to implode on them. Okay? That's the thing about life. If you get a bad idea and start pushing it, you don't realize that it has limitations. Okay? If you don't set up a government along the lines of God's instruction, it is doomed to fail just because it's not right. And even if it doesn't hoist itself on its own petard, that is, blow itself up with its own bombs, God will make it fail. Because the biggest thing they've overlooked is they are going against God. I mean, what does the next line say? Okay. He will not abandon His people or forsake His inheritance. First of all, they're His people. You know, if something belongs to God, do you think He's going to let a puny little man roughshod over it? Okay. Or even the second line, sometimes we forget, in fact, even the translators sometimes, they jink with things because they don't properly understand. Ephesians 1:11 is this way. Okay, Ephesians 1:11 talks about us gaining an inheritance. And it literally says really what this passage says. Those that really are obedient to God, they are His inheritance. And we think, why does God do all this? Because of those that will be loyal to Him. Okay, you know, that's that's His skin in the game. He's got a stake in it. Therefore, He's not going to let men do whatever they want to do because they're starting to mess with His property, His inheritance. That's what He's looking for. In all this, you know, the suffering of the prophets, the apostles, His son, whatever, what is God getting out of it? Precious souls that have come to Him because they love Him. Okay? That's the riches of what he's gleaming out of all the effort. What family man does not appreciate that? Give me kids, give me grandkids, give me all these precious little hands and stuff like that that come up hugging and loving and everything else. I mean, there's nothing worth that. That's the most precious thing in this world. And that's what God's looking for. All these souls, in loving adoration for him, that's his inheritance. And of course he's going to look after it. I mean, that's a duh moment. That these people rightly are called stupid because they've overlooked that. And he just says, okay, the result is there's going to be time when judgment will become righteous or just again. And at that time, the upright in heart will follow after. Okay? There's always going to be an upright in heart. There's always going to be those who want, what God is going to give. I mean, this is another part of, what the psalm is getting across here, of God dealing with things. God will not let things go entirely to the end product of man fouling up everything. He just won't let it happen. If it gets to the point where evil men are running everything forever, okay, that then others will be disheartened. They'll say there is no God. Everyone will go wicked, just as they did before the flood. And God's not going to let that happen. Okay, just as Elijah thought, I'm a poor prophet, there's nobody left but me, whatever. And God goes, no, there's 7,000 that haven't bowed their knee to Baal. There's always some that seek justice. They want the right thing. And they know there's a God out there, and they're waiting patiently for it. And what we need to be is one of those. Even if we can't get in, now we're here for each other, and it's interesting. There's always people that are willing to meet the challenge to rise up, against tyranny and everything. I can't believe all the little groups that are putting together, the Tea Parties and the Freedom Works and all these things that are coming together, to try to get the nation back to, its original intent. That you didn't even know existed. Certain hearts of people that are fired up, preserve what we have. And even more that are dedicated to getting God back in this country. So God's always got people working for him. But even if he doesn't, notice where the psalmist goes with this. Okay. Who will stand with me against those who do evil? Or who will take a stand with me? Who has taken a stand with me against those that do wickedness? Rhetorical questions. And the answer almost, is nobody. Yeah. This is why I added the 17th verse. What we've looked at from 8 to 16 are two paragraphs themselves and complete things. But 17 starts, through the rest of the psalm. It basically says the same things, which is going to sum it up and give you the lesson in verse 17 here. If God had not been my help, my soul soon would dwell in the realm of silence. Very poetic. What's the realm of silence? That's the place, the grave, where nobody can hear the voice. It's a poetic way of looking at it. Once you plant somebody in the ground, basically this is what evil people try to do, like they did with Christ. You put them in the ground, then you don't have to listen to them anymore. Okay? And the psalmist is saying, his situation was so bad, nobody was there to help me, and my soul soon would have been put away. Except for the Lord's help. What is Paul saying? If God is for us, who could be against us? And that's the message to take away. However, how bad times get, look at it as a little chastising and just wait for the evil to dig their own pit. Just wait for it. Okay, that's the thought of the evening. Take it with you. This day has been wrought to you by the letter. Yeah, yes, for salvation. Now these, I like the Psalms. When you really understand the language and get into it, I know I try to talk about. There's just some interesting things. I lay the big words on you of language structure, but it's what makes language, beyond simple. And something to get into. And the figures of language are there to help instruct us. Okay. And it's interesting why they do things. I got a few minutes, so maybe we can play a little bit. I was looking at Revelation. We did a study of Revelation, the first chapter. And I was reading my intermediate Greek book, and he's got an example there of was the fourth verse when it goes, "He who is and was and is to come shortly," or "is to come." Now, you don't really notice it so much in English. I mean, you're so used to reading the Bible, you don't realize how much is messing with the grammar. In fact, in that verse, in fact, what the study is on how nouns are used, not the nouns, the nominative case. Okay, now, cases belong to most Romance languages. There's the nominative, which is the subject, and the accusative, which is the direct object, all that, and the vocative and the dative and all that kind of stuff. So it's a study of how the nominative is used when another case is usually used. And this one verse is an example of the nominative used as an appellation. Okay. And it's interesting as an explanation. If someone was to butcher the English, as to say, okay, this country is strong because of we the people. Okay, now, that little appendage at the end, we the people, that grammar does not fit in with that sentence. Grammatically, it should be, this nation is strong because of the people's involvement in it. But because you went, we the people, you've made a reference to the Constitution. Even though you didn't say it, people understand that because that structure, even if it's bad grammar in that sentence, it still puts you back to something else. And so a lot of, what Revelation does is it just kind of butchers the normal Koine Greek grammar. But it does it in a way that what it's doing is quoting the older grammar of the Septuagint. So in verse 4, John doesn't have to say it is written, or as a certain prophet has said, da 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 da. Doesn't have to say it. All he has to do is quote the bad grammar. And the readers automatically know that he's making a reference to the Old Testament, the Septuagint. Just things like that just interest me as you go through. There's all sorts of things, that are going on. It's part of our own language. We don't even see it. But it's there, and God uses it for a reason. Figure language there, the idioms and everything else are there to arrest the mind. I mean, if it wasn't there, it'd like, see Spot Run or Here Comes Jane or that kind of stuff. But what it's doing is trying to bring your mind up to a higher level of maturity so that it doesn't just read along and skip along, kind of in a dull trance. It constantly arrests the mind, with broken language, with, different kind of parenthetical statements, anacoluthans, all these big words and stuff like that that are figures of speech that the writers use, that God uses, in order to let you know his is the superior intellect. And if you stop to analyze this stuff, you're going to learn something that you don't normally understand. Or you just read over and think you understand it until you get there and settle into the original. Okay. Anyway, just thought I'd hit you with that. If at this time, you know, we have some visitors with us. I appreciate your presence. If you've got any questions about the lesson, I'd be happy to answer them. If at this time you'd like to know more about salvation, how to be reconciled to God, what you can do to be closer to God, draw nearer to God. Yeah, that's a whole different religion. Okay. Okay, I'm going to shut up now. Is there any way we can help, though? Please let us know as we stand to sing.